Theodore Clark looked up at the huge gray columns of cement that adorned the front of the city's largest banking institution. He'd paused there for a moment just before going to meet James Kenyon, with whom he'd taken lunch every day for the past 2 years. And now standing there in speculative manner, he realized that the time was ripe to put into effect the plan he had so painstakingly labored over for that lengthy period of time. Theodore Clark was going to rob this bank of $100,000.
And thus we begin another story by The Player, starring America's most versatile actor, Mr. Paul Frees. We'll be with you after a worthwhile message from your announcer. The Player, Mr. Paul Frees.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is The Player, welcoming you to our presentation of Fate Upsets a Plan. All his life, Theodore Clark had wanted $100,000. Ever since early youth, he had dreamed of the day when he'd be able to have what he considered a reasonable amount of money to spend in his declining years in comfort and luxury. For purely selfish reasons, he had never married. And so middle age was upon him, and toward the goal that he had planned for himself, there was nothing, absolutely nothing set aside. And that was when the thought came to steal $100,000. He had met James Kenyon, a lonely individual like himself, a middle-aged teller in this great bank. Several times when the huge building was empty, Clark would wait beside the cage in which Kenyon worked late at night and watch the teller carry the day's deposits to the massive vault. Kenyon was a trusted employee of the bank with 30 years' service and was the last one at night who closed the vault and set the time lock. And he was the first in the morning who opened it. And he, Theodore Clark, was going to spend the night locked in that huge vault. And Clark hadn't overlooked a single feature that might spell danger, even to the extent of studying how many cubic inches of air he would consume while he was a 9-hour prisoner in the airproof chamber. Oh, it was a great plan. Poor unsuspecting Kenyon would open the vault door early in the morning before any of the other employees were there. He would enter. Clark would have the necessary implement on hand to dispose of the innocent teller. And the required amount of cash taken from one of the steel drawers would be in his pocket. Kenyon's body could easily be hidden in one of the lockers downstairs, and before anyone could make any kind of discovery, Clark would be well on his way out of the city. And so this was how the situation stood when Theodore Clark met his friend Kenyon, the teller, on this bright sunny day and proceeded toward their favorite dining establishment. It was while they were seated, engaged in eating, that Clark discussed a point with Kenyon.
Ah, my good friend, I wonder if you'd be interested in attending a lecture with me this evening.
The schemer already knew what the bank teller's answer would be.
Oh, I'd like to very much, Mr. Clark. But you see, this is the middle of the month. Statements are mailed at this time, and everyone leaves the bank, and I have a great deal of work to do.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm sure you would have found it interesting. Dr. Whiting is speaking at the Group Institute, you know.
Yes, I should like very much to have gone, but, well, You know how it is.
Oh, I'll tell you what I'll do. I shall attend the lecture, then call for you at the bank, and on the way home we shall discuss it at length, eh?
Yes. Yes, that would be an excellent idea. Then I shall expect you to call for me at the bank late this evening. Hmm? You can use the usual rear entrance, come directly to my case, and I'll let you in the door.
Clark left the teller and returned to his work as bookkeeper in the large insurance office further downtown. At 5 o'clock, he went home and prepared for the night's activities. Placing a small flashlight in his pocket, he paused for a moment to examine the weapon he would use on Kenyon. It was an 8-inch length of thick wire looped at one end to hold a round lump of lead and strapped with tape. Concealing the weapon in his clothes, Clark left his dingy apartment and headed for the street. He walked several blocks and dropped into a movie. At exactly 10:15, he left and went to the bank and made his way up the alley in the rear to the small employee's door. Entering, he crossed the wide marble corridor and walked to the teller's cage in which Kenyon was busily occupied.
Hello, my good friend.
The teller looked up.
Oh, well, Mr. Clark, right on time, I see. Did you attend the lecture?
Yes, Mr. Kenyon. Very interesting it was, too. May I come in?
Yes, of course you may. Just walk to the door and I'll meet you there.
Kenyon left his window, walked along behind the long tier of teller cages, and admitted Clark to the inner confines of the transit block. Clark sat on a small stool and watched while Kenyon went over his books.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Kenyon, what time is it?
It's nearly 11 o'clock. Why?
Oh, my. I promised to keep another engagement at this very time. Oh, I must hurry.
But, Mr. Clark, I'm nearly finished. All I have to do is place this money in the vault, check my ledgers once more, and close the vault door.
Kenyon wasn't telling him anything he didn't know. Hadn't he watched the little teller go through this procedure countless times before in the preceding 2 years?
Well, I'm afraid I won't have time to wait, Mr. Kenyon.
Oh, well, I'm sorry you have to leave.
But perhaps we can meet again another time, eh?
Very well, Mr. Clark, we shall do that.
The two men walked a short distance together and then their paths divided. The teller headed for the vault and Clark started for the door. They exchanged good nights and Clark watched while Kenyon disappeared into the steel chamber. Quickly, he opened the door and instead of going out, he stepped back and flattened himself against the wall. And then the door clicked shut. Kenyon emerged from the vault and Clark thought of how easy it would be to make a break for the money now. But the lights... The building was flooded with light, and Kenyon was the only one who knew where the switch was. Perhaps it was just as well. In the morning, it would be easier. With only a few short steps, Clark was inside the vault. Concealing himself against one of the plate steel wall sidings, Clark heard the teller approach the entrance once more. He held his breath as a switch clicked off the lights and then watched while the small stream of light outside narrowed as the great door closed. Suddenly it was pitch dark, and Clark heard the time lock tumblers fall into place. Now his all-night vigil was to begin. Without a moment's hesitation, he spotted his flashlight on one of the great steel drawers and tugged at the handle. It didn't open. A wave of panic swept over Clark as he wrenched and pulled at one drawer and then at the others. Every one of them refused to budge. So, the time lock controlled the currency drawers, too. Fear, cold, unmerciful fear seized the imprisoned man. He made a dash for the massive door, and in his frantic pounding, he smashed the flashlight in his hand. Suddenly, he realized he was breathing heavily. This had to stop. He was using all the air in the chamber. He slid down to the floor in a sitting position, and for the sake of bravado, he began talking to himself.
Take it easy, you fool. You're going to get out of here. Kenyon will be here at 8 a.m, early, before any of the others. There's enough air till then. Sure. Sure, and you'll get your money, too. When he releases the time lock on the door, it will automatically release the currency drawers. That's when you get the money, after you take care of Kenyon first. You've got to be patient, that's all. Just a little patient. Now, lay down on the floor and breathe slowly and evenly. Use your head. Everything will be all right.
Clark obeyed his own voice and laid prone on the cold floor, breathing with as little depth as possible. But it was torture. Each minute seemed to be an eternity. In order to offset the occasional intervals of oncoming fear that he would experience, Clark began to dream of what he would do with his $100,000. Oh, it would be so wonderful never to have to worry or care about anything. Days of nothing to do but lay around living the life of a country gentleman. Nights of gaiety and enjoyment. His musings eventually gave way to a gradual knowledge of the fact that a great deal of time had passed. He rose to his feet and listened. No sound. Nothing. Clark noticed that his breathing was becoming more and more laborious without his being able to control it. Pounding started in his ears and he could feel the blood rising in his head. He coughed a little and loosened his collar, but it didn't help any. He laid down once more and rose again. Then, with the full impact of terrifying horror, Theodore Clark realized that he was choking to death. He had to have air. He clawed at his collar and opened his mouth in a vain effort to inhale. An uncontrollable fit of coughing seized him and his senses began to reel. He sank to his knees and groped with clenched fingers in the dark. Then he flattened out, writhed in excruciating pain, and lay still. They found Theodore Clark eventually with his bloody fingernails hooked over the smooth surface of the steel floor. His face was a ghastly thing to behold, and it was evident that he died a horrible death. James Kenyon, the bank teller, was questioned, and the innocence of the little man's statement gave bank officials reason to exonerate him from all blame. You see, there was one thing that Theodore Clark had failed to remember when he entered the great steel vault to spend the night waiting for the teller to open it the following morning. He didn't know that the time clock had been set for 2 days later, because the next day was a holiday, and the bank did not open.
And that's another play by The Player, your one-man theater, Paul Frees, who portrays all of the parts. Mr. Frees will return after a short visit with your announcer.
Fate Upsets a Plan was written by Walter Gehring and produced by Sam Kerner, with music composed and performed by Rami Idris. Special effects by Fred Cole. Your announcer was Gary Goodwin. This is The Player, Paul Frees, saying goodbye. Until next, we meet.